Okay, so what I want to do is I want to run through some of these ideas on Hebrew poetry but also just remember that like this isn't just Hebrew literature that does this. So all of these kind of poetic ideas and the idea of couplets and the structure stuff, that's true in the New Testament as well. And if you look for it, you can find it. But if you look up a commentary or something, it'll often draw attention to it. But I'll just say like a few of them, like that idea of an inclusio, which is where you have like an opening statement and a closing statement that hold things together. That's very common in the New Testament. So is like the chiastic or chiastic structure. So it's kind of like when you, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a word. I don't know. It's just like a formatting of ideas that is poetic in nature. So when you're reading in the New Testament, you'll read it and you'll think that's cool. But if you look at it and you break it down and you look at the order of their ideas, you'll see that there is actually a symmetry in the order of their ideas that makes it clear that this was not just a quickly written thing. It was a very carefully crafted document because it doesn't rhyme in the English, well, even in the Aramaic or the Hebrew or the Greek, but it does have these kind of ancient ideas of poetic structure that are different to our kind of rhyme and meter. So you don't see it as easily, but they are amazing when you have them pointed out to you, these structural things. So I just want to quickly run through a few of them again, because like in the video we just watched, like 30% of the Old Testament narrative is poetic. So that's a huge proportion of the scriptures. So elements, so in English we have things like assonance and alliteration and rhyme. They're our kind of common things that hold together poetic language for us. But in Hebrew, the essential ideas is to kind of rhyme the concepts or the meaning. And they can rhyme those in a way where they're complementary, or they can rhyme those in a way where they are, the term is antithetical. So I want to run through those concepts in the hope that we will be able to see them better when we read through the Bible. And assuming we have time, and I think we will, I'd love for us to break into some groups and do like a psalm writing exercise. Okay, so I'm going to run through a few of the different types here. So the main types of kind of wordplay that we see in Hebrew poetry, and they don't fall in, you know, this isn't completely exhaustive, but there's kind of a few categories that they largely fall into. The first one is synonymous parallelism. So this is where you have a couplet, which is so two lines, normally two lines, sometimes you have more, but and they will be synonymous so that they will reflect the same meaning. So Psalms 3 verse 1 says, Lord, how many are my foes? So that's the first line. And the second line, how many rise up against me? Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? So you can see these two lines will rhyme the meaning in this context. They don't rhyme in terms of their language, but they do in terms of their idea. So that's a synonymous parallelism. And then we have the opposite of that, which is what we would call an antithetical parallelism. So that's when the two lines, instead of rhyming the same meaning, they will have the opposite meanings. So a good example of that is in Proverbs 17:22. It says, a cheerful heart is good like medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. So you can see they're like the opposite meaning. And what's cool with antithetical parallelism especially is that often those opposite meanings will teach us something extra. Because I wish I'd written more examples down now. The one that I normally will talk about here is about a snare. Someone jump in here with me. That's it. I couldn't remember it. Thanks, Siege. The fear of man will prove to be a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be kept safe. So you can see there's these couplets there. The fear of man is a snare, and if you trust in the Lord, you keep safe. So you have these two synonymous parallelisms that then also function like as a group, as an antithetical parallelism. So fear of man is a snare. There's two. And trusting in the Lord will, you'll be kept safe. So you can see that in the opposite there, you have two examples of of that type of parallelism, and they teach you something extra. So, you know, the fear of man is the opposite of trusting in God. You can get that out of those four things there. So I really love that idea of rhyming meanings. So then the last one, but there's kind of three of these parallelism ideas is synthetic parallelism. And in synthetic parallelism, it's more of a building of consecutive concept more than it is rhyming any certain ideas. So anything that doesn't really fit into the other categories is probably in this category. And so an example of this would be in Psalm 133:1, how good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity. So there's two lines there, how good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity. So I guess it's kind of a synonymous parallelism there, but really it's a building of ideas. So there's a continuity of concept. So when you have like lists and things like that, they would fall into this category as well. Now, there are other tools, and in the video we watched, they actually jump to this in the next week, but I'm just going to run ahead of you, of them, and just say the other tool that the biblical authors love is to use similes and metaphors. So basically, this is where you say God is like something. So a simile is when you use like the word like or as. So you might say God is like a strong tower because who protects me. And as a metaphor, instead of using like or as, you just are stating the thing. So the simile is God is like a strong tower, but the metaphor would just be to say God is a strong tower. So God is like a strong tower who protects me is the simile. God is a strong tower who protects me is the metaphor there. And in Hebrew poetry, we have this thing called emblematic parallelism, which is where we have an emblem or a symbol that is reflected side by side with its meaning. So this is another one, and I love this. So I'll give you an example. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. So we have this idea. It's kind of like its own tiny little teaching and application wrapped up in one go. It's an emblematic parallelism is a miniature sermon, and I think that is really, really cool. But it's using that structure of a simile or metaphor as well. Okay, so the last one that I'll mention, which is a thing that happens in the scriptures, there's probably maybe 10 or so of the Psalms are written like this, is an alphabetic acrostic. So this is something often you'll do in primary school even in English. An acrostic poem is where you will like choose a word. So you might choose the word joy, and then you have to write a poem using the word J and then O and then Y. Which I won't do on the fly because I will just make myself look silly. So in the Hebrew, though, there are, I think it's, how many? There are like 22 characters in the Hebrew alphabet, I think. 22, maybe 23. I can't remember. Either way, though, they'll do an acrostic poem. And for the entire psalm, so Psalm 145 is a good example of this. So every line in that poem, and I think that there is one more line. There is one verse that has an extra line. I don't know why. It's very inconvenient. But if you count that line as well, every line in Psalm 145 starts with the beginning letter of the successive letters of the Hebrew alphabet. So that's a really common way for Hebrew poetry to work, was to do an acrostic poem as well. So I will just wrap up one last little thing before we break off into groups. So Walter Brueggemann, who is an Old Testament scholar and just a really incredible thinker, CJ's pulling faces there. He's a big fan of Walter Brueggemann. He's typing something. Just tell us, Siege. Brueggemann, yeah. he's pretty cool. He has a framework for kind of categorizing Psalms, which is pretty cool. So he basically says everything fits into essentially three categories. And the first of those is Psalms of orientation. So these are Psalms where life is good and happy and settled and reliable and trustworthy and everything is going how it should. And these are often about creation and wisdom and God's favor. So I have some example psalms would be Psalm 8, 24, 33, 104, 133, 145. These are psalms of orientation. And these are the easiest psalms. When we think of psalms, these are the ones that we generally are thinking of. Now, the next category, if you've read the psalms in any depth, you'll realize that some of them are angry. They're not happy psalms, they're lament psalms. So we have psalms of orientation is when things are good, and then obviously psalms of disorientation. This is where things have gone wrong, where they don't add up, where there is failure or uncertainty or even depression or sorrow or grief or anger. These are lament and protest and complaint. So psalms like Psalm 13, 35, 74, 86, 95, 137, there's lots of them. There's heaps of psalms where the people of Israel have, you know, they're in exile and their place has been destroyed and they are in despair and they don't have a problem in saying to God, this is terrible. Why is it terrible? Do something about this. So these are the psalms of disorientation. So we have our psalms of orientation when it's good, psalms of disorientation when it's bad. And then thankfully we have this last category, which Walter Brueggemann calls psalms of new orientation or reorientation. And this is when we've had our psalm of disorientation, but things are now returning to normality, to peace, to goodness again. When we come through the challenge and we get to a place of resolution or hope or new possibility and we reorientate or we have a new orientation back towards God. So these are songs of renewed confidence and a sense of surprise of God's grace. And they are beautiful psalms as well. And they are the psalms when we recognize that we can't go back, but we need to look forward with hope to the future. So psalms like 29, 47, 93, 97, 98, 99, there's a whole glut of reorientation there, isn't there? 114, 148, 150, these are all psalms of new orientation. All right, quick review. So we had different types of Hebrew poetry that don't necessarily rhyme in their meter or their cadence or their in their language, although that is true. A lot of the Psalms and even just the Old Testament were spoken language. So there was a sense of rhythm to them, that, and we often lose that in the translation into English. Actually, I have a Torah on the shelf, which is an English translation that has tried to capture the cadence of it so that there's still a flow. But essentially, when we look at Hebrew poetry, it's about the rhyming of ideas. So in synonymous parallelism, the lines in the couplet, they reflect the same idea. In antithetical parallelism, they reflect the opposite ideas to highlight something or draw attention to it. And then we had the synthetic parallelism, which is about building a series of ideas on top of one another or characteristics or lists or traits or things like that. And then we have simile and metaphor are beautiful tools that the scriptural authors use to describe how something is like something else. So that idea of iron sharpening iron and one man sharpening another. So there is a metaphor in that. But also that reflects emblematic parallelism. And then finally, we said that there was alphabetical acrostic was a tool that the Hebrew poets used to keep things interesting, probably also to help you remember them. Because remember, most people were not sitting there with their book of the Psalms. They were sharing this in community and doing this together.